101, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are written especially for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Dan Friedel brings us a story about one college in the United States that is changing its admission policy to help some international students. I will return with this week's words and their stories. Today, I explain a popular dog expression. And some European countries are considering living with COVID-19. Mario Ritter will share that story. Susan Shand will tell us how the British are helping the world fight COVID-19. But first, here is Dan Friedel with the Education Report.
Dartmouth College in the northeastern state of New Hampshire recently announced need blind admissions for international undergraduate students. Need blind means a university offers admission to students without considering their ability to pay. With the move, Dartmouth, which is the smallest of the famous Ivy League schools, joins other universities, including Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and Amherst, also in Massachusetts, are other examples. A number of U.S. colleges offer need-blind admissions, but only six offer it to international students. At one time, Dartmouth did make need-blind offers to international students, but the school changed the policy after it became too costly. The new policy comes thanks to a $40 million gift from a person who did not want to be named. The school said it is working to establish a $90 million fund to pay for need-blind admissions for international students. Syed Rakan Ahmed is a 2018 Dartmouth graduate from Bangladesh. He is working on an advanced science degree in Boston and plans to return to Dartmouth to finish medical school. Rakan received financial aid to go to Dartmouth. He noted the high cost of higher education in the U.S. does present a significant challenge for any international student, and even more specifically, for international students from low-income countries, such as myself. He said he expects the school to receive more interest from international students because of the change. The current cost of attending Dartmouth is about $75,000 per year. The policy will take effect immediately. That means students currently applying to Dartmouth may go for free if they can show their family cannot pay. In a question and answer page on the Dartmouth website, the school said it did not make the change to bring in more international students. Instead, the college noted that it gives an equal chance to students around the world. The school notes that interest from international students was rising before the news. International students make up about 10% of the undergraduate student population at Dartmouth. That is similar to the numbers at Harvard and MIT. The school notes international students make up 14% of the current first-year class. That is up from 8% in 2016. Christine Chu advises international students at a company called Ivywise, based in New York City. She said the high cost of higher education is one of the first things she discusses when she meets new students. She said Dartmouth's policy should increase interest among international students. Having a need-blind policy opens up that international realm for Dartmouth, Chu said. She added that the decision may help Dartmouth admit international students who would otherwise go to school in a large city like New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles. She offered these thoughts on how Dartmouth's officials might think of their new policy.
We're not in New York City. We're not at Columbia. We're not in Washington, D.C. We're not in Georgetown. People may not immediately think of us. They know we're an Ivy League school, but, you know, we're not in Chicago or Los Angeles, these metropolises. How can we still draw really talented and excellent students? And I think financial aid is a wonderful way.
Dartmouth's top official for admissions and financial aid said the school's move will influence the world for many years. Lee Coffin said, "The students enrolling today will have lives and careers that stretch into the 2070s and beyond. We're announcing to the world that international citizens are full and equal members of our applicant pool and ultimately our student body." Students who have applied to attend a school are often described as the applicant pool by admissions officials. Rockin, the future medical student, gave an example why it is valuable for Dartmouth to have students from many countries and different economic levels. One of his future goals, he said, is to help prevent women in his home country from getting cervical cancer. This form of cancer is limited in the U.S. because many young women get a vaccine. But the vaccine is not widely available in Bangladesh. He said the medical community is not invested in caring for women in the same way that it is in the U.S. He was able to share this information with his American classmates during public health discussions at Dartmouth.
Having international students and having students who have had different lived experiences outside of the U.S. enriches these conversations further. And the need-blind policy certainly makes it easier and I would say creates more of an opportunity for international students to consider Dartmouth as a strong option.
Both Rockin and Chu said the true result of Dartmouth's decision and the schools that follow may be in how international students see U.S. universities. Are universities welcoming to students? Do schools value what international students bring? Chu noted that the COVID-19 pandemic has made it harder for international students to come to the U.S. Rockin agreed, noting that government offices that process visas for students reduced their hours. Also, he said he knew students from Bangladesh who chose to apply to universities in Canada and Australia because of the political environment in America. Chu and Rockin said the move by Dartmouth shows that it is worth the extra effort to come to the U.S. Rockin called the move toward need-blind admissions for international students a refreshing change for the better. Will other universities follow Dartmouth? Chu said, other universities may want to, but change comes slowly in higher education.
Universities are big. They're bureaucratic. You know, it just takes time to change and consider these factors. Now Dartmouth has been added to this very short list of schools. But to me, that's a positive thing.
I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks, Dan. And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Sometimes the best way to deal with a problem is to face it head on. But sometimes it is not. In some cases, it can be a good idea to give a problem or a difficult situation time and space. Sometimes we just don't want to deal with it, whatever it is. So we ignore a situation and act as if the problem does not exist. And of course, we have an expression just for that. Actually, we have a couple. But the first one we will talk about is this: to let sleeping dogs lie. To let sleeping dogs lie means to do nothing in a situation. Sometimes taking action can make things worse. Sometimes it is best to leave well enough alone and to not stir up trouble. In some cases, more trouble. That is when we let sleeping dogs lie. There are other expressions that have a similar meaning. When we let nature take its course, we do not interfere. We sit back and let events unfold. To let something unfold means to permit it to happen naturally. Now, turning a blind eye to something is different. This is when you choose to ignore something. Usually, it is something bad that someone else has done. In this case, you also choose to do nothing. If you turn a blind eye to something, you stand by and let it happen. For example, when teachers turn a blind eye to bullying in the classroom, really bad things can happen. Sometimes turning a blind eye, though, is helpful. For example, if your friend has a bad habit and you choose to ignore it, you are turning a blind eye to their bad habit. Now let's listen in on two friends as they use some of these expressions.
Hey, do you have a minute? I really need to talk to someone.
Sure. What's wrong?
My coworker Jess is really mad at me.
What did you do?
Well, he didn't get a promotion. So, at a work gathering recently, I told his boss that she made a mistake.
Oh, no.
And that she should give him the promotion.
Oh, boy. That is a big no-no. You should never interfere in someone's work life.
I know, I know. Now I feel like I should call his boss and apologize.
You definitely should not do that.
But I made a mistake. I want to fix it.
That will not fix anything. You need to let sleeping dogs lie.
A phone call is not a big deal.
In this case, it is. Jess's boss most likely has forgotten your comment, but if you call her, it will only stir up more trouble.
I guess you're right. But it's really hard to not do something.
Think of it this way. If you meddle again, you could really make things worse for Jess. And then he may never talk to you again.
You're right. I won't call. Maybe I'll send her a card.
You're hopeless.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo. Our next story comes from Mario Ritter. He talks about how European countries are considering living with COVID-19.
Some European countries are making new policies to deal with COVID-19 as a usual infectious disease, similar to the flu, and not as a public health crisis. At the beginning of the pandemic, Spain, for example, ordered people to stay at home for more than 3 months. People, including children, were not permitted to go outside, even for exercise. The economy sharply slowed. Officials said the measures prevented a collapse of the healthcare system. But last year, Spain's Supreme Court ruled that the draconian measures were not constitutional. Now, Spain is planning to employ a different policy. The country has one of Europe's highest vaccination rates, but also is suffering economic weakness. The government is planning to deal with the next increase in infections not as an emergency, but as a normal infectious disease. Spain's Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, wants the European Union to consider similar changes. The goal is to move away from using crisis measures and toward treating the new coronavirus in the way that many countries deal with the flu and measles. Other European countries, including Britain and Portugal, are planning similar action. In Britain, Prime Minister Boris Johnson told Parliament Wednesday that the infectious Omicron version of the new coronavirus has peaked nationally. Johnson said, beginning on January 27th, many COVID-19 measures would end. These include required vaccination proof to attend public events. The country will also end its requirement that face coverings or masks be worn in public. As of Thursday, British secondary schools no longer require mask use. We will trust the judgment of the British people and no longer criminalize anyone who chooses not to wear one, Johnson said. Last month, British officials renewed strong restrictive measures to slow the spread of the Omicron version of the virus. Johnson noted that more than 90% of those over the age of 60 in Britain have had a third additional or booster vaccination against the virus. Portugal has one of the world's highest vaccination rates. On New Year's Day, President Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa said the country had moved into the endemic phase of the pandemic. Endemic means a disease will continue to exist in some areas for years to come. The president was speaking about easing crisis-level restrictions. The number of Omicron infections has again gone up. But the number of people admitted to the hospital and deaths among vaccinated people in Europe are much lower than at earlier times in the pandemic. In some places, the idea of returning to normal life can conflict with efforts to get more people vaccinated. In Germany, for example, 73% of people have been fully vaccinated. Health Ministry spokesman Andreas Defner said Monday that we still have too many unvaccinated people, especially noting older citizens. Over 80% of Spain's population has received two vaccination shots. Health officials are placing their attention on booster shots for adults. Dr. Salvador Trenche is head of the Spanish Society of Family and Community Medicine. It has called on policies that treat the virus as endemic. He said widespread vaccination and infection mean efforts can be placed on prevention, testing, and watching moderate to high-risk groups. COVID-19 must be treated like the rest of illnesses, he told the Associated Press. The plan has been called the fluization of COVID-19 by the Spanish media. For now, some observers say the discussion about how to deal with endemic COVID-19 is limited to rich countries. They have used vaccines and public health systems to deal with the severest effects of the pandemic. And it is unclear how the endemic-linked policies will coexist with the so-called zero-COVID policies in several Asian nations, including China. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Next, Susan Shand talks about how the British are sharing genetic information about COVID-19 with the world.
British scientists have created a fast, less costly process for genome sequencing each coronavirus case they examine. Britain is now a world leader in COVID-19 sequencing. This helps public health officials follow the spread of new variants, develop vaccines, and decide when restrictions on movement are necessary. Researchers at the Sanger Institute in Cambridge and other laboratories in Britain have a new mission. They are sharing what they have learned with scientists around the world. The Omicron variant, now spreading in many countries, shows the need for worldwide cooperation, said Ewan Harrison. He is a top researcher at Sanger. Omicron was first found by scientists in southern Africa, who quickly informed the world and gave officials time to prepare. Since dangerous mutations of the virus can happen anywhere, scientists must continually watch its development to protect everyone, Harrison said. Cambridge University professor Sharon Peacock understood the importance of sequencing the virus early in the pandemic. She knew sequencing would be important to fighting the virus. She received British government money for a national organization of scientists, laboratories, and testing centers, known as the COVID-19 Genomics UK Consortium. The consortium is now working to increase knowledge of sequencing around the world. It has built training programs for researchers in developing countries. The programs include planned online classes on information sharing and working with public health officials. The goal is to help researchers build national programs to sequence COVID-19 viruses. There is inequity in access to sequencing worldwide, the group said, adding that it wants to end the unequal situation. By sequencing as many cases of the virus as possible, researchers hope to identify variants of concern as quickly as possible. They can then follow their spread and give early warnings to health officials. Britain has supplied more COVID-19 sequences to researchers around the world than any country other than the United States. It has also sequenced a bigger percentage of its cases than any large nation. Researchers in Britain have released about 1.68 million sequences, or about 11% of reported cases, said GSAID. GSAID is an international organization that works for quick sharing of virus information. Over the past 2 years, labs around Britain have refined the process of gathering and studying COVID-19 viruses. This has helped cut the cost of examining each genome by 50%. It has also reduced the time it takes to sequence from 3 weeks to 5 days, said the research group Wellcome Sanger. Increasing sequencing ability is like building a pipeline, said Dr. Eric Topol. He is head of innovative medicine at Scripps Research in San Diego, California. In addition to buying costly sequencing machines, countries need supplies of reactive chemicals for the machines. They also need trained people to do the work and who understand the sequences. They also need systems to share the information quickly. Meeting those needs has been difficult for many nations, including the U.S. It is even harder for developing nations, Topol said. Many of these low- and middle-income countries don't have the sequencing capabilities, particularly with any reasonable turnaround time, he said. So the idea that there's a helping hand there from the Wellcome Center is terrific. We need that. Virus samples arrive from around the country. Lab assistants carefully prepare the genetic material. It is placed into the sequencing devices that read each sample's unique DNA. Scientists then examine the information and compare it with other identified genomes to follow mutations. They want to see how the virus is developing. Because COVID-19 mutates all the time, it is important to look for new, more dangerous variants that might be resistant to vaccines, Harrison said. This information will help researchers change existing vaccines or create new ones to fight the virus. I'm Susan Shand.
Thank you, Susan. And that's our program for today. Thank you for listening. Some content in this program was provided by the Associated Press or Reuters News Agency. And don't forget to join us again tomorrow. to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.